Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. I'm your host, Ben, and joining me on this week's show, round the table, we've got the great and good of rugby league journalism. We've got Martin Sadler's here from the League Express. Matthew Shaw is also here from Rugby World. And also from League Express, we're joined by the wonderful Doug Thompson, who's here as well. So, hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. Fixture preview for round four of Super League coming up shortly. We're also going to be discussing Widnes, head coach changes, and we'll be talking winning games at last with Hull FC's Mark Snead. He'll be joining us later in the show. But we are going to kick things off. We're recording this on Thursday morning. It's 10 past 11. Just a quick Widnes update before we kick things off with the Super League. Who wants to go first? Who's got their ear to the ground at the Holton Stadium? Oh, everyone's pointing at Matthew. Matthew.
Yeah. They are holding talks all day Thursday. The players have a meeting at 12:30. There is no deal yet reached between the administrators and the local consortium that is trying to purchase the club. If the administrators are still in charge by the end of play today, the game against Featherstone won't take place on Sunday because it comes back to insurance costs. That is where we're at the minute, to and fro in. It's really on the cliff at the minute, what happens.
I was speaking to Steve Roberts at Radio Merseyside earlier this week, and you know, obviously there's been a great groundswell of fundraising and that kind of thing. Mm. But to my mind, and to his, and to everyone who's doing all this fundraising, it seems to be about not necessarily saving the club wholeheartedly, but actually proving a point to the administrator that there's a reason to have a club. That's been the plus about all this fundraising.
I mean, I don't think the administrators want to see the club liquidated. That's not what they want. They would like a resolution, but they've got to get the right resolution. You've got to remember that, and I think fans can forget this, the administrators aren't there to do what's best on behalf of Rugby League. They're there to do what's best on behalf of the creditors. And just giving away the club for nothing isn't the answer, unfortunately.
Although, having said that, liquidation, obviously, what did the creditors get out of
100%, that? 100%. You know, they've got to get the best deal possible.
Something is better than nothing, isn't it?
It is, but not a lot is. Yeah. It's still probably, in the long term, not going to secure anything.
It's one of those situations in which no deal is definitely worse than even a poor deal, if we're really honest about it.
Let's not talk about that.
It's a bit too early for politics, Martin, to be honest.
But you know, there is this. If you wait for a perfect buyer, you're going to be waiting an awful long time, it seems to me. In fact, you won't ever find one. I've never found a situation in which people who have come in to buy a club in this sort of situation have been absolutely perfect. But the key thing is, can they keep the club alive? Can they actually play the fixtures, even if they've got to sell players and so on and so forth? I mean, you know, whatever happens, they would have a 12-point deduction. So it would be a battle actually against relegation for whoever does take over, in the same way that it was for Bradford a few years ago. And Bradford, obviously, as we know, couldn't avoid relegation after a 12-point deduction. But, you know, the fans, the people of Widnes, they've raised £110,000 so far, but they really need to get behind the club to pay their admission money, to show that they value that club as part of their community, get behind it, and, you know, if it can be saved in the short term, then hopefully in the long term it can be shored up. They can get new people coming in. You know, I noticed, for example, Mel C from the Spice Girls was tweeting about them. It's great to see that, isn't it? And
do you follow Mel?
Sorry?
Do you follow Mel?
I don't follow Mel, unfortunately. But she was, now, yeah. She was tweeting about, you know, because she comes from Widnes, you know. And, you know, it's great to see that sort of moral support from people in her position. And, of course, although I don't follow her, I'm sure millions of people do. So, you know, it gets the thing out there. And, you know, we want to see people wanting to come in and buy a rugby league club, to buy it for the right reasons, you know, to generate and to get that sort of community backing for it. And I think that, you know, I think the Widnes Club has an awful lot going for it. Unfortunately, it's been apparently badly managed over the last few months, but there's no reason why it should be in future.
And talking about the the fundraising and that side of things. I think over 1,000 people have now set up a standing order for £10 a month, which is quite
fantastic.
I think what you can conclude, whatever happens to Witness as we know it, whether the if the worst does happen, it's liquidated, there is a future for rugby league in Widnes with a professional sports club. I think that's abundantly clear. Nobody wants it to go into liquidation, but if that does happen and people are still willing to support like they have been doing in the last week or so, that there is a bright future for rugby league in Widnes.
Well, wish everyone well at Widnes, like we said last week, pretty much. But TotalRL.com, the place to go for breaking news from the Holton Stadium. But we'll come back to Widnes probably on next week's show. But let's go back to the bread and butter that is Super League and round three. A great match, I thought, on Friday evening between St Helens and Leeds. I enjoyed it. I don't know about anyone else. I thought it was a great occasion. Come to you first, Doug. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, proved that Leeds are coming back into the game, but that Saints, you know, what we all know, a really good side, were being really consistent, and it's really opened it up. I mean, Leeds have had a tough start to the season. They've played some of the main rivals at the top.
All of them away.
Yeah, exactly that, and they played a first home game, obviously, this Friday. Headingley looks fantastic, by the way. I've been looking at pictures of it this week. It looks brilliant. So that's going to be a really exciting place for anybody to go and watch a game of rugby league. But yeah, it's going to be a really interesting game, and you know, Wakefield being resurgent as well, who go to Leeds for that first match at Headingley, that's going to be a really interesting matchup. But Saints, you know, are just consistently and grinding out those wins in the way that we know St Helens do.
I thought Leeds were desperately unlucky actually at St Helens last Friday. You know, I mean, obviously, Alex Wormsley and Luke Thompson I thought were brilliant. The way they brought Saints back into the game was fantastic, and you know, it's great to see Alex Wormsley back playing as we know he can play, and Luke Thompson as well showed incredible footwork to score his try. But I thought, you know, Leeds had one or two tries disallowed. They also, with just 2 or 3 minutes to go, had that terrible decision of the referee where Morgan Knowles clearly knocked on, and then the referee gave a scrum to St Helens. So, you know, it was off a Trent Merrin offload. Knowles knocked it on, and Merrin couldn't believe it, spoke to the referee, but didn't get anything out of him. So Leeds could so easily have won that game, and you know, they often do win at St Helens, but you know, they're going into, they've now got a record of 1-3, which isn't ideal for them, but they are looking a good side. I think you know, I've had grave reservations about Conrad Harrell before he came. I wasn't sure he was the best signing for Leeds, but actually I think he's played brilliantly. I think he's been outstanding. Yeah. So my reservations about him have been gradually withdrawn, because you know, he looks a real, I think I wrote in League Express this week that he reminds me more than anybody else of Leslie Vinicolo, and you can't say more than that, can you, really? I mean, you know, there are a lot of games still to go, so hopefully he'll continue.
The signs that David Ferner's sort of structures and systems that he's bringing in are coming into play at least now. It's early days for the coach, isn't it? It always takes a bit of time to get those ideas across. You know, you can't replicate competitive games. He's getting them now, and things are starting to move forward, and it is looking better for Leeds.
I thought David Ferner spoke very well after the game as well. He's obviously very disappointed, particularly with some of the refereeing decisions, but didn't sort of respond to the invitation to really, you know,
have a go.
Said he'd do it in the right way, which is, you've got to say, you know, great for him, and to see him with that sort of attitude, I think, and I think that'll go a long way at Leeds.
I was going to say, every time Conrad got the ball, my little lad was very, very excited by, because he's my new favourite, I think. I think he's great when he's on the ball, especially in those last third positions.
Oh, well, he's the sort of player that, you know, you can discuss and debate his actual ability, but when he does have the ball in hand, you are excited because something is going to happen.
He's a bit especially when he's near to the line.
And I mean, some of the hits he's been putting in defensively as well. There was that one a couple of weeks ago on Hardacre. He absolutely crunched him. Yeah. He's been great entertainment and a great player so far as well.
Doesn't like jumping for the ball though when it's in the air. I've noticed that. I'm like going, right, jump. But no, nothing. Anyway, so
there's a lot of him to get off the ground.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to be. I wanted to be careful how I phrased it. Yeah.
Well, St Helens are one of three teams still with 100% records after three games, and as the lads rightly say, there Leeds. Back at Headingley on Friday night for that match against Wakefield. We'll come back to Wakefield in a second or two. But another team with a 100% record is Warrington. I'll come to you for this, Doug, as well. Huddersfield 20, Warrington 32.
Yeah.
I was watching the Sky game and the score updates were coming in, obviously, from Huddersfield. Warrington were always out in front. Huddersfield kept coming back occasionally, but
yeah,
Warrington were comfortable in the
they
end.
They did, Huddersfield, but you always had the sort of feeling that Warrington had an extra gear to step into, and they never quite did, which is a good sign to me. You know, if you win a game without really hitting the straps, you know, as the season goes on, I think they'll get stronger and stronger. And there, Warrington's still developing as a team. You felt a little bit for Huddersfield because they kept going, they never gave up, and they did get back to within a reasonable distance of them, but then got the sin bin in, which changed the game inevitably, and never quite got there. And the two tries that Huddersfield got at the end of the game really put a bit of gloss on the scoreline that probably shouldn't have been there. But I guess the worrying thing for Huddersfield is that you look back to last season, I think they've lost 8 in a row now because they lost the last 5 of last season. And Simon Wolford, having made a big impression when he first went in and a real good positive impact, is now struggling a little bit just to sort of turn that run around. And with Hull winning as well, that was going to be an interesting game on Sunday. Hull now have got a little bit of momentum, and it's going to be really interesting to see what Huddersfield can do on Sunday.
I mean, Steve Price did say Huddersfield had a dig, to quote him.
Yeah.
Bunny is.
Well, Huddersfield, before the season started, you know, were saying big things about what they were going to do this year. Of course, they got rid of Danny Brough, and they've brought in, what was his name?
Matt Frawley.
I couldn't even think of his name then, which is a bad sign, isn't it, if you can't immediately think of somebody. And he doesn't yet look to be a real great replacement for Danny Brough, whereas Danny Brough is playing great for Wakefield. So it's not looking great for Huddersfield, and even though they've got players coming back, it didn't work out for them against Warrington. And if they don't beat Hull on Sunday, then that will be 0-4, which would be, you know, getting fairly serious. I think
Simon Wolford summed it up quite well after the game. He said that they have got a little bit of time on the side, but they haven't got much time. You know, he realises they have to stop this run soon. Mm. You know,
I'd be quite optimistic because the most honest player in that group is Jermaine McGilvery. If they've been rubbish, he says we've been rubbish. And in League Express this week, he was saying, "Look, I genuinely think we're not far off." Mm. And he's an honest character. And so for me, if Jermaine McGilvery is of the belief that they're in an okay position, then
they have had a lot of players out injured as well, haven't they?
The first two games, with the number of players they had out, they weren't going to win. And then they've played Warrington, who, let's be honest, are one of the top two in terms of the bookies.
Well, they look like the team to beat this year, don't they, Warrington?
Yeah. So for me, I think let's assess them after two more games.
Well, as you rightly point out, this weekend Huddersfield Giants hosting Hull FC on Sunday. Catalan Dragons will be hosting Warrington, the TV game on Saturday. That comes to Catalan Dragons now, and that match against Wakefield. Wakefield pretty much, 14 points in 6 minutes. So,
well, Bruffy dominated the game, didn't he, with his kicking game, I think. And the Catalans looked not a well-balanced side. Playing Tony Gigo at stand-off and Sam Tompkins at full-back is precisely the reverse of what they ought to be doing, in my opinion, because Gigo looked completely out of place at stand-off. He didn't look happy there. Many of the things he did didn't work. You know, it was a fish out of water, really. You know, and it's odd, isn't it, that he won the Landstad Trophy at full-back for the Catalans last year, was outstanding, was being chased by North Queensland Cowboys to replace Ben Barber, apparently, at fullback, and yet he's not playing fullback now for the Catalans. I think, you know, Sam Tompkins is a great fullback, but also is a pretty good standoff as well, and I would switch them round pretty sharpish if they're going to do anything this year. I think it's, you know, he's got the wrong combination. I also was a bit disappointed with Matty Smith at Wakefield last Thursday. you know, we'd all been expecting Matty Smith to bounce back from that disappointing year at St Helens when he hardly got a look in. But, you know, he was kept pretty quiet against Wakefield. And Wakefield, on the other hand, Bruffin and Miller at half-back looked a great combination. Then you got David Fifita absolutely enjoying himself. You know, I love seeing players who look as though they're enjoying themselves on the field. And Fifita just looks as though he is, doesn't he? He's having a great time charging, you know, and the Catalans found him really difficult to handle. And it wasn't surprising that Wakefield won that game comfortably, I thought.
I was really underwhelmed with the way Catalans went about the game. Look, they've always been very direct and very physical down the middle, and that's fine, but they've got a lot of speedy players and a lot of players that are very dangerous in broken play. They threw no offloads, really. The one time they threw an offload that I can remember of was Mika Simon, which was a wild offload, but they scored the try because the play was broken. They moved the ball to the right quickly and scored through Sami Soni Lange. I thought they, when you've got players like Gigo and Tompkins who thrive off a bit of space, I didn't think they did anywhere near enough to give them the space to get the best out of them, whichever position they were playing in. No. So for me, that's where they are going wrong, I think, Catalans. I think they need to offload the ball a bit more.
Not to break the habit of a lifetime, but we need to mention Danny Brough for the fifth week on the trot. 500th appearance.
Yeah, phenomenal, isn't it? 500 appearances.
It is amazing. I was going through his Wikipedia page. I don't know if any of this is true or not, but he's had a great career, hasn't he, Doug?
Amazing career. I mean, but anybody to play 500 games in any sport at that level is phenomenal, isn't it? And the amount of punishment that he probably takes in terms of, you know, the position he plays. Yes, and didn't he do really well on that 500th game? What a fantastic kicking game. And Martin mentioned Jacob Miller, who is also a pretty decent kicker, and that's a real strength for Wakefield, because if Brough's not kicking, they've got Jacob Miller to come in and do a pretty similar job. So, yeah, but fantastic by Danny Brough. Yeah.
From Wakefield to Castleford now, and a good win for Castleford on at the weekend away over in the capital. London 6, Castleford 40. As comfortable as that scoreline looked, I caught a bit of it on the telly. It looked a bit plain sailing.
It was comfortable for Castleford, wasn't it? You know, London are finding now the hard truth of being in the Super League that they were a bit unlucky against Hull Kingston Rovers, winning at half time and losing in the second half. They beat Wakefield comfortably, of course, in the first game. But they really struggled against Castleford. You know, Castleford are a classy side, classy Cass, of course, and they just had far too much firepower for London, not least in Liam Watts, who was absolutely outstanding up front, and London had nobody who could really compete with him, and of course Jake Truman, who's already having a really strong season, I think, in the absence of Luke Gale. So it was you know. London are going to have to. They will find some easier fixtures than that, I think. And I think we'd all like to see London doing really well and staying in Super League. But it's going to be a battle for them, I think.
Just on Liam Watts, Martin mentioned that. I think he's going to be in and around that England squad now. His first three performances this year have been phenomenal. His discipline's always been the thing that people have started as letting him down on for not getting to that international level. But for me, some of his performances have just been remarkable this year, and probably the in-form English forward at the minute.
Well, he's in the top six of the Albert Goldthorpe medal, isn't he, with 5 points from three games, which is pretty good for a prop forward, because prop forwards tend not to attract most of the points. It's normally the halfbacks and so on, and maybe even the hookers. But for a prop forward to be up there, that's really good, and long may that continue.
Yeah, he was said to be nailed on for an England spot last season, wasn't he, before he became unsettled, and he obviously had
to change his clubs. But there's some strong competition, isn't there? You know, Walmsley and Thompson.
Which is exactly what you need, isn't it?
And that's before you start thinking about the guys in the NRL. You know, so, you know, the England, you know, Wayne Bennett, if we are going to have this tour of New Zealand, if goodness knows if we are, but if we are, we've got some real good players in that position.
Well, Castleford returned to action on Friday night, taking on Hull KR. The TV game on Thursday night, this evening as we record this show, is Salford against St Helens. Hull KR 22, Salford 24. Doesn't really tell the full story of this game. I mean, hell of a comeback from Salford.
They just like coming back at Craven Park, don't they?
I was going to say,
they just love a comeback itself, there.
Jackson Hastings were a man of the match display as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, he continues to, you know, to make the headlines as Jackson Hastings. And, you know, I've got to say, I thought when they were 22-4 down at halftime, OK, I thought that was it for them. I thought, OK, we'll probably pull away and win by a bigger margin. But Salford showed a tremendous amount of character and commitment and determination to come back in that game. And at the end of the day, they deserved to win it. They scored a great try, by the way, by Ken Seale, which could quite easily have been the try of the week for League Express, because we always have a try of the week. But instead, we gave it Castleford Tigers, one of the Castleford Tigers tries, which is also a brilliant try. But so I think Salford are six from four games now. They look as though they're not going to be in any sort of relegation trouble this year, as long as, you know, the guys they've got can avoid injury. And of course, there's still this talk about Ryan Brearley joining them, isn't there? We don't know how far that's gone, whether it's on or off.
It's
or
an interesting one.
What's going to happen?
Well, I think he'll end up playing for Toronto this week.
You would have thought so, wouldn't
because
you?
They've Joe Mellor's, I think, got a calf injury. They've torn his calf, so he's not going to play. McCrone's been playing at hooker, so where do you play him? For me, Brierley will play. But anyway, on Salford, I've said all along, I think they'll be the team that will upset people this year. It does come down to what Martin said. It comes down to injuries. We can repeat this every week, but they will beat teams while they're fully fit.
Tonight will be a good time.
I was going
to
say, are they going to prove difficult for St Helens tonight?
They will certainly prove difficult. Whether they'll beat them, I'm not sure.
I think the St Helens forward power will probably win out tonight. I just think St Helens have probably got more forward power than any other club, to be honest, at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we saw it against Leeds last week. Their backs don't have to fire, but their forwards will win the game for them, in my view. I mean, that front row of Roby with Wormsley and Thompson alongside him, crikey, that's a pretty good front row.
How do you combat that? How do you repel it?
Well, with great defence, which Leeds did actually for quite a bit of their game, didn't they? And, you know, I mean, Saints got on top early in that game, but then Leeds came back. Maybe Saints were a bit complacent. I don't think they will be against Salford, though, somehow tonight. Right. I think they'll be, you know, they've had some big wins over Salford in recent years, and I suspect it might be another one tonight.
Well, only a couple of years ago, though, that Salford was when Kevin Cunningham was in charge, probably 2017, maybe even. And Salford did a real job on Saints at the AJ Bell on an evening game. I can't remember if it was Thursday or not. Salford are better at their own ground as well. I am a big fan of Salford. I like the way they play. I think behind.
So do I.
I think behind Castleford, they're the most entertaining team to watch in the competition. So yeah. I think it'll be a really good game.
It'd be great to see them hopefully having a crowd of about 5,000 tonight with Saints being there.
Hopefully.
Hopefully taking a few.
Thursday night will knock a few off.
Not easy, yeah. No, but you know they want.
Relatively close journey.
I think the crowds are slowly starting to get better.
We've delayed this bit of the show enough now. We're going to be here for Mark Snead in a second or two. But what a time to be alive, Doug. First golden point in the history of Super League. Beautiful.
If you like golden points, it was, yeah.
22-22 at full time between Wigan and Hull FC. And then up steps Mark Snead in extra time. Or is it called overtime? Golden point time. Golden point time. And let's hear what Mark has to say on the matter.
Obviously, really, really good to be the first one to get it, but obviously after the run that we've been on and what have you, it was just more important just to get that win than like any means necessary, really.
What a game to be a part of as well. I mean, I was trying to keep it up to date with it all, and the game was, to say it was to-ing and fro-ing would be an understatement. I mean, what was it like being part of that game? It was a bit nerve-wracking by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it got a bit nervy towards the end, obviously. Because we put a lot of effort into the game, and obviously Wigan being Wigan, they stuck with us throughout the full bit of the game. And luckily enough, that final try they scored were out wide, and obviously gave us a shot of going to golden point. So to concede that late in a game, even though it ended the way it was, it was still a little bit heartbreaking.
for your teammates and yourself as well, and the coaching staff, you must have been thinking to yourself, what do we have to do to get a win? Because obviously the whole derby and the whole KR try right at the end there. I mean, we touched upon the losing streak, but you have been there or thereabouts in the early stages. So, I mean, what did you think when Hardacre was about to step up for that kick?
Yeah, it worked great. Obviously, within the group, we know that we've not been a million miles off. We've played some decent rugby, and we've just been unfortunate, basically. But when you're in a rut like we have been, you obviously always seem to be on the wrong end of them results. But luckily enough, we finally got a turn, and we took it. Like at the end of the game, you can see the pile on and the celebrations from the sidelines, from the fans and everything. Like you'd have genuinely thought we'd won a cup final, I think. But I think that just showed the relief and like how much it actually meant to everybody to actually get off the mark and finally get our season going.
And the next game then is Huddersfield away this coming Sunday. Everyone looking forward to that one and making it 2-2?
Yeah, big time. We have a look at video of Huddersfield during the week, but they've made a couple of signings there, and a little bit like ourselves. I don't think they've won a game yet, but they're not playing bad rugby at all, so they'll be thinking kind of what we were thinking last week, and something's got to change at some point, and they'll be hoping that it's against us, but we'll just be trying our hardest to ride the wave and keep on top.
And finally then, Mark, I've just looked at the league table, and obviously you don't get to a grand final at the end of February, but 2 points outside the playoff positions. So what's your take on where Hull can go to next this season?
I think we've just got to go week by week. I think because of the way that we are at the minute, obviously with injuries and suspensions and things like that, I think to look too far ahead into the future would be a bit stupid. But obviously if we can turn up week in, week out, with the same attitude that we had on Sunday in the Wigan game, I don't think we'll be too far off.
So Mark's need the first player ever to score a golden point in the history of Super League. So a big thank you to Mark for joining us on this week's show. The most important thing though is, Doug, Hull win.
Absolutely.
And repeat that, everyone. Hull won.
Hull win and
the one.
It does seem a long time, and it is a long time, given that you've had the winter in between all that as well. But yeah, I mean, good to see, really, because you know it's been a tough time for them. You were starting to worry a little bit for Lee Radford. I'm not saying it's all roses now, because it's one game, isn't it? And but you know, he looked to be a coach who was trying everything he possibly could, and really couldn't see the wood for the trees, really, by the end of it all. And as these things often happen, it came about in a sort of not unexpected, but in a pretty dramatic way, and it opens up a whole new debate about whether you think the golden point's right or not. But it's dramatic, and it's good to watch.
Does it work? Because you know Zach Hardacre is there, knows that if he scores that, Wigan have sorted it. If he misses, it's going to golden point. More drama.
I very rarely sit on fences. This is one topic that I sit on the fence. I would rather it didn't exist and would have the draw. I understand why they do it, because it manufactures unforgettable
drama.
Moments. Mm-hmm. It manufactures drama. All those Hull fans will remember Mark Snead kicking that winning drop goal for probably the rest of their lives. So from that point of view, yeah, I get it. I get it, but I'm quite a fan of a draw.
It sometimes creates drama. Sometimes it just creates chaos, though. You know, in a lot of Australian games I've watched, they're going backwards and forth, drop goal attempt after drop goal attempt from 40 metres out, missing and missing and missing, and it becomes farcical in the end. And, you know, the great thing was at Wigan on Sunday that it actually ended pretty quickly. Wigan gave away a penalty in golden point time. Hull moved downfield and Snead, of course. I mean, that's certainly true. The golden point rule could almost have been invented for Mark Snead, if we're really honest about it. Or Danny Brough, you know. Those sort of players who can land a drop goal from anywhere, it's, you know, it just bumps up his value a little bit more, doesn't it? And he certainly... Not all Hull fans are convinced that Mark Snead is a great scrum half, but he does have this habit sometimes of being able to pull things off when they're needed, as we saw at Wembley on two occasions, and as we saw on Sunday at Wigan. So you just can't criticise him for that, can you?
Sport is silly, isn't it? I mean, Hull not won in ages. 2 points from the playoffs now, so there you go. but Championship Round 4 also took place this past weekend. Toronto defeated Lee. Swinton very, very unlucky against Toulouse. Really, really unlucky, actually. No Golden Point in Cumbria, though.
I was just going to say, I mean, Championship, ironically.
Barrow 20, Dewsbury 20. I've not asked Paul Crary or Lee Greenwood what they think, whether they would have preferred Golden Point, but... A 20-all draw, that's...
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I think they'd be happy.
Batley got off the mark as well against Rochdale. Fev beat Halifax. And what a result for York at Bradford. York like going to
doing really, and York are doing well, aren't they? You know, everybody's maybe a little bit doubtful about how they cope in the Championship, but they've come to and had a real, I think, three wins in a row.
Well, York's result was outstanding, wasn't it, on the weekend. And the team I felt sorry for, though, was Sheffield Eagles, who actually had a great start to the season, yeah, 3 wins
maybe
out
lost
three,
a bit of momentum,
and didn't play at Widnes, and must have lost a bit of momentum, you imagine. This week they play Batley Bulldogs on Friday night, so hopefully they can get that momentum back.
I'm still a bit sceptical on York. I was at the game.
Well, they might be sceptical about you, Matthew.
Get in touch, let us know.
I thought they were okay. They were fairly good. I don't on what I saw, and I can only comment on what I saw, I don't think either of those two teams will be competing for the playoffs.
Actually, the really interesting thing about York, which we've not mentioned, is the fact that they're going to be playing now at Bootham Crescent for the rest of the year, because their stadium, you know, has been put back. It's being developed, but it won't now be ready until the start of next season for them. Yeah. And in a curious way, I don't think that's a bad thing for them, because to be moving stadiums halfway through a season, mm-hmm, what could be incredibly disruptive, actually, I think.
They're starting to make Bootham Crescent their home as well. Yes, exactly. They've overtaken the football club in many ways.
Oh, very easily, yeah. Getting bigger crowds.
Bootham Crescent's the kind of ground that can be quite difficult to go to because of its compact nature.
And
a big, absolutely.
Cracking press section, though.
Good fans love that get it. Behind the club. You know, it's quite a partisan place, and a new stadium often isn't the same. You know, so
it's a great ground and one that they've really made a fortress. And that if they are going to push for the playoffs, I think that'll be it. I could say I don't want to sound too cynical. I thought Bradford were really poor, and I thought York's defence was very good, but that was.
Follows a good result.
It's a great result.
I'm saying it follows a good performance against Toronto a couple of weeks ago.
For me,
Barrow.
They got nilled in that game, and I thought York played better against Toronto than they did against Bradford, despite losing.
It's a great story, though, with York, isn't it? Because it's only 24 months ago that they were...
Oh, 100%.
Amazing story.
Coming out of Huyworth.
They could have been Widnes, couldn't they?
That's the template for Widnes. You're absolutely right. And, you know, let's hope that Widnes can... You know, do what they've done and generate that incredible fan support.
Yeah, I mean, they've been very proactive in terms of social media and putting the name of the club out in York, and which is a really right place for any sports.
The interesting thing is as well that I actually live in North Yorkshire, not in York, but you know, a few miles from there. And York are setting up supporters clubs in a lot of North Yorkshire towns. There's, you know, the Harrogate Knights have recently been formed, which is a supporters group based in Harrogate, and it's just great to see them spreading their tentacles out from the city of York into some of the neighbouring places. That's exactly what you ought to be doing. It's, you know, clubs like Warrington and Widnes should be expanding into Cheshire and those sort of places, and it's great to see.
They are the benchmark. This has been said countless times. They are the benchmark, particularly for part-time teams in how they should be run. 100% are doing wonderful. Just a generalisation, Ben, on the Championship. I think there's 5 teams that have now won 2, lost 2. That what we said, that everyone will beat everyone, is starting to live up to its purpose. You can look at the triangle between Featherstone, Halifax and Lee. Halifax beat Lee. Lee beat Featherstone. Featherstone beat Halifax all in the space of 3 weeks. Mm. So it's gonna be an enthralling competition.
And I tell you what, we've got the Swinton programme there from Sunday. They were one kick away from beating Toulouse, and it was an amazing performance, and they're on zero.
There's something going on. There's something not quite right at Toulouse.
And you're going to say
injuries.
Toulouse haven't had a great start, have they?
Injuries. They did field a couple of young players in that game, apparently.
Yeah, they've not changed their squad much from last year, have they?
They lost Chris Centrone, which has been a loss, but they kept the key men. Mm. And the key men are playing. Corrales playing, Ford's playing. Curran's playing.
They have got the dual reg now, haven't they, as well?
Well, they're 4 from 4. I mean, they're well in contention. They're in sixth place at the moment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't start writing the obituary.
Oh, no. It's just you know. It's, I mean, you could... I've watched Halifax a few times, and Halifax are nowhere near where they were last
year. Did you
year.
Go to Featherstone, by the way?
Thankfully not.
No, because you wouldn't have seen them, would you?
No. Have you seen the pictures?
Yeah. It was amazing.
I'd have been asking for a refund for half of my ticket because they half the pitch.
Yeah.
It looked beautiful, though, didn't it, as a setting. But anyway, League One as well. That's obviously on to round two of League One. Two teams with 100% records, Workington Town, who had a great start to the season, and Coventry Bears. Wow. They beat the Newcastle Thunder, and that sadly saw Jason Payne leaving as head coach.
Two games.
I spoke to Aaron because he obviously brought the news. Yeah. And is that too soon?
Yeah. I can't really add anything to that. It's just too soon.
I think it is sensible, isn't it, really? It seems very harsh.
It's a panic measure, isn't it? Let's face it. You know, when you sack your coach after two games, you are panicking, I'm afraid.
The only thing that I can ever think when this sort of situation happens is that they were doubtful going into the season whether the coach was the right person at any club.
Mm.
And then it's just aided to the fears. But you do wonder then if you're going to sign like they have, if you don't have complete trust in your coach, then you would get someone in.
In a perverse way, isn't this a sign of intent from Newcastle that, you know, they are wanting to win this? There's no doubt.
They've made a big investment, and it needs to pay off that investment, or else it won't happen.
You have to say and take nothing away from Coventry, because like Newcastle, they're doing some great things on and off the field at the minute. But with the squad that Newcastle have, they should not be losing to Coventry. I mean that with absolutely no disrespect. They shouldn't be losing to Coventry.
I think in defence of Jason Payne, you could say there's been a lot of changes in that squad. A lot of high-profile players have come in, and it does take time just to gel and to get everything working. And perhaps it's a little bit too soon from that point.
It'll be interesting to see who they get in.
Very interesting, yeah.
I
don't think it's going to happen before the weekend, because they've already announced who the...
Yeah,
it's Tim Mumford, isn't it?
We've got a couple of experienced guys. Funnily enough, Mick Mantelli's back again, isn't he? Yeah, a couple of experienced people behind the scenes that were helping Jason Payne, so they're not going to struggle in terms of
It's interesting as well because Jason Payne's obviously wasn't just the head coach; he was also part of the academy setup,
the university, which is a big part of the development.
And that's
probably why
he's been given a 3-month hiatus with the view of him
coming back
maybe, because there is a lot more to Jason Payne than just the coach. Wish him all the best anyway.
I just wonder if Chris Foreman might be interested in that job.
Geordie lads. Yeah, absolutely.
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you? And I assume he's looking for a job at the moment.
Yeah. I know this is stating the obvious, but that's a big job now, isn't it? The Newcastle Thunder job, because of the potential of that club.
Well, Newcastle clearly are hoping to be in the Championship next year.
Yeah, and they need to get it right, don't they, now?
Should be really in the Championship next year. They're a potentially big club, let's face it. They've got great facilities, a great stadium. They've got a wealthy backer behind them. Their crowds are building up, slowly but surely. They're regularly attracting a four-figure crowd these days. That's great to see. They've got a load of juniors in the area who are coming through, some kids in the England under-16 train-on squad. So things are looking good for them, except the two results on the field so far this year. But as I say, take nothing away from Coventry. You know, Coventry have improved a lot this year, by the look of it. And again, as a major city in the West Midlands, it's great to see rugby league.
Similar clubs, aren't they, in terms of the potential to develop down. Both Coventry and
Coventry
Newcastle,
play at Keighley this coming week, so that's going to be an interesting one for them, isn't it?
And that's the first competitive league match at Cougar Park.
Since
the new takeover.
Exactly.
Cougar Mania 2.0, hopefully. I believe it's being called. So.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I was too young to remember Cougar Mania back in the day. I'd love to see it.
You're that young.
I am a baby.
I can remember it, I'm afraid. and it was quite entertaining as well.
It was, and
you kind of think it could happen again with the people there, because they're the sort of folk who can generate excitement.
The problem is now that we have seen one head coach go, that does tend to create a domino effect across the sport. There are going to have to be a lot of chairman and chief executive, especially in League One, just going, we're not going to jump the gun here, because Hunslet beat Doncaster, for example, and, you know, there's Oldham and West Wales are no mugs this season. There's going to be a few teams losing more than two games this year.
100%. And it's the same in the Championship. You know, if any of those clubs that are on tour two are panicking, it's stupid. It's just the nature of the competitions now. I didn't think Jason Pay was in danger, but I don't see at this moment in time any coaches truly being in danger of losing the jobs. Not in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Can you just don't say that for the next 2 or 3 hours, just to make sure the show can go out first before anything happens?
I just don't find that hard to believe.
I think the result of the weekend in League One was Hunslet winning at Doncaster.
Yes.
You know, because Doncaster started with a great win at Newcastle.
Yeah.
And this was Hunslet's first game of the season. And to win just by 2 points. So they've only played one, but they're obviously undefeated. And a lot of people tipping Hunslet this year as a real potential, you know, dark horse for promotion. And I can certainly see that happening.
I don't want to brag. No. That was me.
Right, I'm still tipping Workington.
That's nearly it for the show. But there is a big piece of speculation that we've not even touched upon on this week's show, and that's, you know, that's not the start of the Southern Conference or anything like that. It's America. Matthew, I'm going to come to you for this bit. You've been quite prominent on social media the last 7 days or so. Where are we with the great pioneering spirit of rugby league heading out west?
That's a big question to answer. There is a lot of people interested in setting up a new club. We all know about New York. We all know about Eric Perez.
What we don't know is that how far down the line these talks are.
Honestly, I don't think the RFL know themselves without trying to make them sound daft. I don't think they really know. The Super League clubs are wary of the inclusion of too many overseas clubs.
Is it up to them now?
No. But they're wary because of the TV, of what it, how it affects the TV deal. If you have Catalans, Toronto, Toulouse,
well, the obvious thing to do is to expand the Super League to more clubs than 12. I mean, that's the solution staring them in the face, and that would enable them to do away with the loop fixtures. Yeah. So, what's the problem?
But they're wary because they don't have Sky and how that affects the Sky deal.
The problem has always been said is that it's the player pool that's the problem. I mean, could you get Super League up to 14, maybe even 16, like League One was a few years ago?
It's a fair point, you know, because what happens is if you just randomly pluck up two new clubs, they have to get the players from somewhere. They can get some from overseas, but naturally you take some from the other clubs, and then it's a domino effect down to the grassroots game. Eventually, that's what happens.
Well, interestingly enough, I was talking before the season started to Tim Sheens, the whole KR coach, and he said he would make Super League 16 clubs now with, you know, the top four clubs in the Championship. He thinks they could be competitive. He's got no doubt about it. And I was really surprised when he said that, because obviously he's the ex-Australia coach. He's had massive experience. But he was saying, you know, we ought to do that. And why
you've got
not?
To speculate to accumulate, haven't you?
Well, sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. And, you know, we need Super League to be bigger, to have a wider footprint. And, you know, I think it's great to have London in, you know, for example, this year, but if London were to be relegated, we'd be back to being an M62 sport.
The reality of the situation at the minute, if you're going to expand it to 14 teams right here, right now, who is ready to make the jump up to Super League? I can think of one club. That's Toronto.
If Toulouse were in Toulouse are going to the big stadium for the Toronto match. If they were in that stadium, they'd be assumed, wouldn't they?
Yes, but there is talk that there are more financial pressures being imposed on Toulouse in terms of travel.
That was in Rugby League World, wasn't it?
Yeah. Even Sylvain Houls accepts they're not ready because of the pathways and so on and so forth. So if the coach is saying they're not quite ready, then that to me says they're not ready. You then go beyond that. You're looking at Featherstone, who are a part-time club. You're looking at Halifax, who are a part-time club. You're looking at Widnes, who are clearly not in a position to go to Super League right now. Lee, who have just gone part-time. And yes, you can say, well, New York or Boston or wherever Eric Perez is planning on setting his club up. Can you just throw them straight into Super League?
It's not going to happen in the short term, is it?
Is it worth flagging it, though, and saying this is the plan, so at least clubs know that this is coming
up?
But
this is the frustration that...
Because that encourages investment, then, in the lower levels, doesn't it?
That it does. And the thing is that the new television deal will run from 2022, and you need to have a plan to take to the broadcasters for that deal. You know, for example, if they were to say there were going to be 16 clubs in Super League in that from that time, with say two conferences of eight or whatever, you know, you could create something that would work really well. That would, I'm sure, enhance interest from broadcasters, I would have said, rather than just more of the same old with, you know, what we've got now. And, you know, it we need to think carefully about it, or at least Rob Elston does, because, you know, the next TV deal, you can't overemphasise how crucial that's going to be.
I'm not one to bash the RFL regular like others are. That's not my game. I try and be fair. But my biggest criticism always, I use the same word, or same phrase, lack of transparency. And this remains the same on the potential inclusion of more North American clubs.
Yeah.
We were told by Ralph at the Super League launch in January that there would be a briefing on all of this.
Early February.
We're now a day away from being in March. So that isn't going to happen because we haven't been briefed about it yet. So at least, okay, that's not happening. Why? We've not, you know... You don't. The public don't get to know this, and that's a problem.
And it's exciting, isn't it? If you suddenly said there's going to be a team in New York in 2020 or 2021, that's exciting, isn't it?
Unfortunately, Ralph is the invisible man at the moment, isn't he? I'm afraid, and you know, none of us know where he is, what he's doing. You know, he might be, you know, on the other side of the world or on the moon for all the rest of us know. Is just not communicating, and that's unfortunate, because rugby league fans, in my experience, like to have somebody at the head of the game who's pretty visible and shouts out, you know.
But it's not just a sport, is it? It's kind of like
a bit
movement.
Of a movement. It is. Yeah. It's a social and cultural movement in a way, and you know we like to see a leader who can go on television, radio, and talk about the game, talk the game up, and get us excited about it.
Particularly at a time like this, you need that.
At one time, Maurice Lindsay used to do that. I mean, Maurice had lots of faults, no doubt, I'm sure, but he was great at talking the game up, and you know, that was one of his great strengths, I thought. And we could do with somebody like that now.
Look at the news coverage when Red Star Belgrade played Milham. Look at the news coverage, Red Star. But imagine what New York could do if they entered.
100%. Gosh, yes.
Amazing. But anyway, that's nearly the end of the show. But some parish notices. Rugby League World was out on Friday.
Yes.
Good interview with Partizan Belgrade. I agree, actually. We give Red Star Belgrade far too much love. What about Partizan, eh?
Yeah, it's nice that there's that bit of rivalry that's sort of moved from other sports into Rugby League. I think it's great. Ash Hope does a great job with all that international. I don't know where he gets those stories from sometimes. I'm sure he makes them up. And then I fact check and I'm like, nope, they're 100% right somehow. the mags seems to have got well received. So fingers crossed people keep buying them. And it's interesting.
And League Express out on Monday. Any bits of juicy gossip or anything that we can...
Well, I'm sure there will be, but we've not put the news together yet. But whatever's happening in Rugby League will be in League Express on Monday. There's some really nice juicy gossip, because we've got... I don't know if you've seen the Rugby League Heroes series, which has been some great reading written by Richard de la Riviere, but he's doing a two-piece thing with Paul McDermott, the former player who's the older brother of Brian McDermott. And he's got some really nice comments about Brian McDermott in there. You'll have to buy it to read them, but they are absolutely fascinating. And, you know, they'll be worth the price of the paper alone, believe me.
As ever, you know what you get with League Express. You get the news, don't you? And the match reports and so on and so forth. So.
And some great columns.
And some great columns at times, I suppose, yeah.
absolutely. But, for the latest news from the world of Rugby League, totalrl.com. And that's the end of this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to Martin Sadler, Matthew Shaw.
Pleasure.
And Doug Thompson. A big thank you for joining us. And wherever you're going this weekend, cheer on your Rugby League side. Make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.